And our guest this evening, we are delighted to have in studio with us the president of St. Bonaventure University, Franciscan Sisters, Sister Margaret Carney, the first woman ever to graduate from the Franciscan University of Rome at the doctoral level. In 1997, Sister Margaret came to St. Bonaventure University to serve as a faculty member of its world-renowned Franciscan Institute. Within 2 years, she was named dean and director. She holds 7 honorary doctorates and is a member of Duquesne University's prestigious Century Club and serves on the board of the Association of Catholic Colleges and the Association of Franciscan Colleges. Most recently, she was named one of the most influential Irish-American educators by the Irish Voice magazine. Welcome to the Busted Halo Show, Sister Margaret Carney.
Thank you, Father Dave.
A little Irish you've
just
got.
Just a little.
Yeah, you've got a little bit. I've kissed the stone.
I haven't.
You've not? No?
I keep saying to people I'd be really dangerous if I had kissed the Blarney Stone.
Ouch. There would be too much. We'd have to do a 6-hour radio show.
Right, exactly.
How are you?
I'm very well,
thanks for coming in this evening.
Thank you for having me.
Now, St. Bonaventure University, have you guys transitioned into the summer mode yet, or the graduation happened?
We are definitely in summer mode. It's very quiet, too quiet for those of us who love to have our students around us. But our big Franciscan ongoing education programs will kick in pretty soon, so the place will become sort of a minor Assisi.
Right. So the Franciscan Institute, right?
Correct.
Does it do a lot of summertime continuing education, that sort
of thing?
It
does. We do a lot of continuing education, and basically friars and sisters come literally from around the world to be updated, to meet with scholars, to keep their own education current, to do some networking with each other.
About purely Franciscan topics?
Yes. We have a master's degree, which has prepared over the last 30 years, a relatively large number of friars and sisters who've gone on to leadership, not only inside the Franciscan order, but in a lot of ministries, everything ranging from one graduate who was one of the English-speaking editors of L'Osservatore Romano, the official Vatican newspaper, and another from the very same class who did some of the earliest work of Catholic outreach to persons with AIDS.
Oh, my. Wow.
So quite a variety
yes.
of ministries have come out of that.
Sure. The Franciscan Institute, is it open to other people besides the friars and the sisters?
It certainly is. And in fact, we're increasingly seeing young lay Catholic and also some Protestant students coming who really want to go back into an area of spirituality that's a very rich field of study and also of pastoral work in the church.
And do you teach some of this?
I used to. Unfortunately,
yes.
My current duties don't let me
You're
stay
busy.
In the classroom. I'm very busy.
A president of a university.
That's right.
A lot of dinners, probably. A lot of the ribbon cuttings. Fundraising, that
actually,
sort of thing.
Actually, I'd like to do more ribbon cuttings.
Ribbon
because
cuttings.
Ribbon cuttings means you've got new buildings,
buildings.
And new programs.
Yeah.
But lots of dinners, yes.
Yeah.
So I do a lot of entertaining myself, and then I'm entertained by being invited to a variety of events.
Great.
It's fun.
And St. Bonaventure is in St. Bonaventure University. Is in Western New York.
It is Western New York.
Which
we
I know, having grown up in New York.
It's
the Buffalo area.
It is the Buffalo area. Thank you. You go to the top of the class. A lot of people don't know where we are.
I went to school in Syracuse.
Excellent.
At Syracuse University.
Fine.
And had my first experience of buffalo wings at Syracuse University.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, our most famous export.
Yeah. We've had the guy from the Anchor Bar. And
there you go. And you know, President Obama was there recently, and he made his mandatory detour for some wings.
Got to get some wings.
Right.
Well, Sister Margaret, we talk on the Busted Halo Show, particularly on Tuesdays. We call it Vocation Awareness Tuesdays, about how God calls each of us. And in the church, sometimes we associate that word only with priests and religious, of which you and I are. But vocation is really much broader than that, isn't it?
It certainly is. And in fact, I would say one of the things that I find really thrilling about working at a Catholic college is seeing how many of our students come with an intention that I'm coming to St. Bonaventure because I want to major in journalism. I want to major in business. They have a great English program. And through the variety of service learning activities that have really exploded for us over the last 10 years, students begin to deepen a sense of what life is all about through that. And then they also begin to deepen that sense because we're very intentional about a curriculum that starts the students out asking the really big questions in their freshman year. What is the purpose of my life's journey, and why will this education outfit me
that
journey?
Okay.
So we try to really move the students without necessarily using the terminology
right.
into a kind of vocational way of thinking as quickly as we can.
Because again, as we say almost every Tuesday, we all have gifts that are given to us by God. We all have a call to serve in some particular way. I don't know about you, or at least your experience at the university, but working in campus ministry as I did for my first 4 years as a priest, oftentimes it seemed like students somewhat had the approach that it's, if you remember the game show, Let's Make a Deal with Monty Hall, that there were these three doors and I better pick the right one that God has for me, because if I don't, wah, 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 you know, it's the nothing there. And so honestly, students would often be quite concerned or have great anxiety. I don't want to pick the wrong thing. And I think it's, you know, we do a lot of making God into our own image a lot of times. And even though God certainly does have, as we say, a plan for our life, God calls us in a certain way. I don't think it's like we can really pick the wrong thing and God goes, oh, no, that's not the door. Sorry.
Right. You go into the loser circle if you choose the wrong door.
Exactly. Yeah.
Actually, what I sense with the current students is not so much a fear of choosing the wrong door as perhaps a lack of awareness that their choices have extraordinary potential for them.
Okay.
And I would say that the thing that makes the biggest difference is if some member of our faculty or staff really ends up in a mentoring role who understands those bigger questions. Sharon Parks talks about worthy dreams, big questions, worthy dreams. If we have somebody, whether it's from campus ministry or from our friar community or our lay faculty who are very dedicated in this regard, who really can let the question emerge with a lot of patience and a lot of personal attention. What I'm seeing is students who are not so much worried about making a wrong choice, they just think the choices they're making are what they are. They're a sort of, I need to get out of here, I need to get a job, I need to, you know, pay off my loans and, you know, set up my own household. And the larger, sort of the larger life direction is on the shelf for too long.
Our guest this evening on the Busted Halo Show, Sister Margaret Carney, apparently an Irish-American educator and a pretty darn good one. The Irish voice. The Irish-American educator. True. Are there awards? They give you like a little shamrock that's got a microphone or something?
They actually hosted a marvelous reception for us at the Irish Cultural Center and near Central Park and did give us a little plaque.
Yeah, that is quite nice.
That's right.
Well, and we're talking about various aspects of vocation, and obviously particularly you see it quite in person, not only undergraduate students, graduate students, but also at this institute, the Franciscan Institute, where people come maybe of all ages, even some quite senior lay people, as well as Franciscan priests and nuns and friars and whatnot. And would it be fair to say that God's vocation is, for most people, not usually just kind of done and one and done, and that oftentimes there's a call within a call?
I would absolutely say so. In fact, just last night I was reading a 4-page handwritten letter from a young man named Trevor Thompson who came to us. He had been in the seminary, realized at a certain point that his call was perhaps to marriage and fatherhood as opposed to a celibate lifestyle, came to us to complete his master's degree in Franciscan studies, stayed on and really helped to redesign an outreach that our campus has. We run the soup kitchen of our small town. After about 4 years of doing a really superb job, he received an invitation to become a director of ministries in an absolutely thriving North Carolina parish, Raleigh. And he is there now. So this letter was sort of a reflection of how each door opened into another door.
Right, right.
And he's still thinking about, you know, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, what might be some of the other experiences that will open up as long as he stays attentive to those possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also important for us to highlight on Vocation Awareness Tuesday. There may be a lot of people listening who have yet to kind of settle on their particular state in life, whether it's marriage or religious life or ordained ministry for some. As a woman religious, what do you often respond when people say, well, how do I know? How do I know if I have a vocation or not?
I think if the person is really trying to understand or figure out whether or not they have a vocation to a specific public ministry in the church.
Okay.
The good news there is that we get to try it on for size.
Yeah.
I often say to people, you know, in some ways, I hate for my married siblings and friends to hear this because I think it's sort of not fair. We don't let people try marriage on for size. We
that's
expect
true.
It to be, once you've made that commitment, that's your commitment, and we hope it's going to be for life. But the reality is that, especially for religious life among women, there's a very gradual process by which a woman can grow through a variety of stages of making a final commitment to a community. And so I don't think a person should be as fearful of taking some of those initial steps as they might have been years and years ago. However, I do think it does require a certain level of maturity and commitment even to do those initial steps. And so I think some people step back. They're just not quite sure about whether or not once they've sort of put their foot in the stream, whether or not they'll recover their old independence if they decide it's been the wrong choice.
And it would probably be an understatement to say that religious life in the church, and particularly women's religious life, is undergoing a bit of a transition over the last, let's say, 40 years.
I would say this past year has been a very tough year.
For
religious women in the United States, in the church. And if I can just unpack that for a moment. First of all, it's no secret that many of our religious congregations are in a stage of very serious diminishment.
Yeah.
Our median ages are very high. We have relatively smaller numbers of women entering. What we're going through is a transition which philosophically we can embrace as, you know, we do our best with our lives and we leave the rest up to God. However, sociologically, it's pretty tough. If you are yourself getting up there into the senior citizen stage and you don't see a lot of people following you, it can be a rather lonely, even depressing time because the end point for many of our small communities is very uncertain at this time. In addition to this, the Vatican, for reasons that are still not very clear to most of us, have decided this would be a really good time to conduct a visitation. And usually a visitation means an investigation to correct a problem.
Yeah, it's not like, hey, how's it going? Hey, we're visiting.
That's right.
Yeah. It's a fun word.
That's right.
Oh, they're visiting. But really,
it's like your mother-in-law is coming to visit. But the fact of the matter is, I do believe that some of the persons instrumental in designing this have truly good intentions.
Sure.
And they recognize that a really serious crisis is about to manifest itself in that many communities are not going to be able to maintain their properties, their works, maybe not even care for their most elderly and infirm members.
With the severe diminishment that you mentioned in terms of incoming numbers, it also means just general resources. It's not just a matter of, okay, well, we have no new people, so we'll just fade away. There's part of how the system works is that if you do have new people, then there's income coming in so we can care for our older people. And the Paulists, as a religious community of men, right now we're having our general chapter down in Washington, D.C. and addressing some of the same issues
because
there's not a lot of us.
Right.
So the investigation, if you will, is like, well, gee, how can we help? How can we address this problem?
That's right. And I think that is part of the intention. I think the dilemma is that the way in which the visitation has been constructed in some of the initial documents and questionnaires that were sent out suggest that the questions are not quite focusing on the problems as we are experiencing them. Mm-hmm. So there's a disconnect between the methodology being used in the actual experience in many, many congregations. However, the actual visitations are only now beginning to take place, so it's a little soon to render judgment. But I would say that a lot of Catholic sisters at this time are feeling rather unsettled just because we're doing the level best we can to face the future, to continue to invite women to look at this way of life, which is a marvelous way of life. But I really think it also has to be reinvented to fit 21st century cultural expectations of adult women.
Right.
And a lot of the structures and practices that we have come to us from the 19th century, if not the Middle Ages.
Right, yeah.
And we really need to put some of those in mothballs.
Well, I mean, as a matter of fact, I mean, just in terms of women that you work with, that you see, I would think you see a lot of young women, and there you are as a president of a university and also as a religious sister. I would imagine that would be inspiring to women.
I have have to speak up about this too, because I have an 18-year-old daughter and who started her college journey. She's now going into her sophomore year. But I love that we're talking to you because I think you're such a great example of how somebody can put their faith in the forefront of their career, as well as move with the times, like you said, bring it into the century, as well as still being a very strong woman. Because I think a lot of people think that to join religious life, that you're giving up all the other aspects of life. And we have callers calling all the time asking, well, you know, if God wants me to do this, then I can't be doing that. And I think that you're a great example for a way that for how people in general, but especially women, I think it's a lot tougher for women to be strong women and to still be strong in their faith and to present that with such grace and such strength as well, and be such a great example to the women at your school as well as your peers.
Well, you know, Robin, thank you very much. Your observation is really fascinating, and it's making me remember that when the women's movement really began to take sort of social form in this country, and I would attend various meetings where women would be talking about, you know, we're discovering sisterhood. Those of us who are Catholic sisters were looking at them like, oh, really? You're discovering sisterhood.
And then
you'd have to step back and realize that we were in a life form where one experienced daily, in a de facto way, women supporting each other, women mentoring each other, women fighting with each other and making up with each other, women in leadership. Because if you go back and look at the history of institutional works of social concern in this country, Many Catholic women were college presidents and hospital executives at a time when women in the mainstream couldn't begin to aspire to those roles.
Right.
So there's a history of powerful women's executive roles and leadership in religious congregations of women that is not apparent to a lot of people. The Hollywood versions don't quite get it.
Right, exactly. Right. That makes sense.
So in terms of, as you're suggesting, and perhaps Sister Margaret is raised by, or made pointed, or the question is pushed by the Vatican visitation, and we're talking about new models, obviously there at St. Bonaventure University and this Franciscan Institute. Do, for instance, Francis and Claire and their relationship and the communities that they gave us, do they present something of a model that we need to kind of reinvestigate or uncover, or say, how would they live in the 21st century and create community?
Well, you know, that's interesting because that is the question that sort of enlivens much of what our Franciscan Studies program does. And I would say it's not only what Francis and Claire can do for us, but there's an 800-year trajectory for an order as old as the Franciscans. And in addition to them, many other kinds of experiments took place in the centuries in which, in particular, Franciscan women tried to experiment with forms of life that were not monastic or not cloistered. So let me just give an example. This is not specific to the Franciscans. But in the early Middle Ages, in urban centers in Europe, there was a flowering of a life form for women that were called the Beguines, like the song. The Beguines tended to be middle-aged women who were either widowed young or whose husbands were off on the Crusades or trading expeditions. They would, for a religious purpose, form an association in which each woman had her own private household.
Really?
It would look like a little townhouse today. Each woman was expected to be economically independent. So it was either her dowry or her inheritance, or she earned her living through nursing, teaching, or, for example, in the Low Countries, lace making, you know, skilled crafts work. And it was a temporary commitment. A woman made her promise to stay in this way of life 1 year at a time.
Right.
One or another woman or a Franciscan friar or Dominican friar would come and give some theological, spiritual conferences. So the women had an intellectual life as well as a social outreach life. And it flourished for the better part of two centuries. And then it sort of fell apart because the church was not comfortable with women who were not permanently cloistered.
Hmm.
And sort of controlled in that way. I think that life form could be a very, very interesting experiment in today's American Catholic community.
Well, and we've definitely seen in vocation work across the boards in our own community of priests, while we still obviously, as religious and even in the ordained ministry, value a permanent lifetime commitment, as we do with the vocation of marriage as well, that in order to get people into that, we need to find some new ways where they can do more temporary commitments. Or as you said right off the bat, we need to, you know, actually do it, get our feet wet, get right in there.
Exactly.
And then what a great advantage that is.
Surely. And I think one of the things that we've learned in the last 20 years that a lot of women and men, but particularly women, came into religious life at a time when our society was far more stable, shall we say, in its expectations and options for women. And in the last 40 years, women discovered they had a much wider world, and many left religious communities, but they didn't leave a commitment to being very focused on service and to their own spiritual development. And many of those women are doing incredible things in society today.
Wow. Well, Sister Margaret Carney, president of St. Bonaventure University, you are doing some incredible things there. I would imagine, as long as we're talking about Vocation Awareness Tuesday and a vocation within a vocation, I'm guessing that you didn't imagine when you were a novice or a postulant that you would be the president of a big university and winding and dining and raising lots of money and making big decisions and having boards and all this. I mean, is that another way in which God continues to call us throughout our life?
Actually, I like to say to people that the fact that I became president means I failed to achieve my life's goal. Because my life's goal really was to teach Franciscan spirituality and Franciscan women's history. And I got called to this in spite of the fact that I was hoping to remain in that other position. But you are absolutely right. And the reason I accepted the invitation to become the president of the university was that I had been called into service as a vice president on an emergency basis.
Okay.
So I thought this was a one-year deal, and I was helping the university through a rough patch. What I realized in that year was, as the search for the presidency went forward, the laity on our campus, not even necessarily our faculty, although they were included, but you know, many of our administrative staff and our students were expressing a real desire to experience a way of Franciscan community that they knew that our university could provide. And they were really looking for someone who would be willing to lead the university into that deeper communitarian style of administration and service. And I suddenly realized that I was doing work which was wonderful for a relatively small number of religious. And here were 2,000 to 3,000 students saying, please, can't we have some of that too?
Yeah, yeah.
And suddenly it was like scales fell from my eyes. And I said, I would be much more comfortable staying in my teaching role, but I am seeing an opportunity here to share what has made my life so happy with a whole lot of young people who clearly see that happiness and they want some too.
Wonderful. Sister Margaret Carney, thank you so much for coming down to the Busted Halo Show. Even though it's a little downtime at the university, I'm sure you've got a lot of things to do.
I think so. And I'm happy to be part of the Busted Halo.
Oh, that's right. Yes, as are we. Maybe if we do an on location with the chicken wings.
Why not?
God bless you and your work there. And Francis and Claire, I've felt the spirit of them when I've been traipsing around their homeland in Assisi. It really is beautiful.
It is beautiful. So thank you so much.
I envy that piece of it. Thank you.